Members, I want to remind you that the Senate File 2075, as amended, has been moved before us. Today, we will take up amendments to Senate File 2075 before we refer to the Committee on Finance. We'll take up today's amendments in the order that we receive them. First, I'll offer the A5 amendment. This is a technical amendment that fixes some drafting errors and adds clarification to some of the language in the bill. So with that, is there any discussion on the A5 amendment? All in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? The A5 amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A6 amendment, which I'll also be offering. This incorporates Senate File 3097, a bill to fund a study on remedial course practices at Minnesota State, which we heard last Thursday. It also reduces the teacher shortage loan repayment increase by $125,000 and reappropriates that to fund this study. $125,000 in fiscal year 24 and 25. So with this bill, it will have the Office of Higher Education with the responsibility of reviewing, analyzing, and submitting recommendations to address the problems in college admission. Course placement policies, practices, and assessments used by the Minnesota State Colleges and University systems. The review will determine if policies, practices, and assessments have, first, adverse consequences for a student and their family, including burdensome economic and related costs of delaying their degree plans. Second, hindered the participation of students. Third, hindering the placement, retention, or timely college graduation of students. And finally, has excluded students from admission, thereby hindering their full participation in higher education. And with that, is there any discussion on Senate File 3097? The A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? The A6 is adopted. Next up, Senator Rarick, I understand you have the A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have the A7 amendment, and this, let's see which one that is. Okay, so this would be doubling the amount that we are giving to MICC in the first biennium and making that money available through 2027. And I believe this was money that was unaccounted for in the budget.
Thank you so much, Senator Rarick, for bringing this forward amendment. I do support the doubling of MICC's 24-25 appropriation to allow them to receive funds through 2027, since their base funding has been discontinued in this bill, and I want to speak a little bit to that decision. As we put this bill together, we tried to standardize the way that this committee treated direct appropriations throughout the process in regards to nonprofit organizations. And with MICC summer enrichment programming, the Minnesota Association of Black Lawyers, for example, College Possible, and Fostering Independence Wraparound Services grants, we've written those all as one-time appropriations for fiscal year 24 and 25 and not extended the funding into the base. So with that said, I do support Senator Rarick's amendment, and I'll be a yes vote. So members, is there any further discussion on Senator Rarick's amendment? Any closing comments, Senator Rarick? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to speak in support of this. I've been a special education teacher for most of my professional career now, and this seems to be a really good program. Actually, since I've learned about it at the beginning of session, I've referred three different families to at least explore this program. So I'm glad to see that it's going to receive the funding to be able to continue to grow. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Farnsworth. Any other? Senator Kupick.
Sure. Yes. And I would echo the same thing, and I'd echo Senator Farnsworth's comments too. I too referred families to this program as well. So I fully support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kupick. Any other members would like to speak to the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator Duckworth.
Just briefly to thank you and your team for working with us to try to find a way to make this one work. It's very much appreciated, and you guys were very, very helpful to try to find a way to make it happen.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Senator Rarick, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the A7 amendment, and I guess I should make one last comment for the members.
Yes.
We do have a number of folks from the MICC here today, so we're glad to have them here as we make this vote to support them.
Thank you, Senator Rarick. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The A7 amendment is adopted. And next up is the Senator Rick, I understand you have the A8 amendment as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A8 amendment. And this one is also dealing with MICC, and I know you just described what you were hoping to do, but this one would provide them funding in the ongoing bienniums. We're moving some money from the MinState provision, and I'm blanking on which one it was. I got to look that up. But moving that money to MICC, you know, we just heard we're referring families there. This is incredible work that they're doing, much needed work. The need is ever growing. So asking the committee support for this one group to include them in that next biennium funding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your comments, Senator Rick. Again, for the previous reasons as well as this amendment would be taking the money out from Minnesota State's the student health base. No, I'm sorry. Yes. Student health support. Yeah, I'm sorry, the student health support. I'm personally going to be a no vote on this amendment, but I thank you, Senator Rick, for bringing this forward. Are there any questions or comments to this amendment? Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for being here today. It's really great to have some MICC students here, and I'm really glad that we were able to give you a little bit more funding. There is, I think, as the chair has suggested, a concern about base appropriations versus, you know, regular appropriations where you have to come back and ask for it every time, and I think that's a legitimate concern. It's important, I think, for us to have opportunities to see you again when you need more resources. But of course, obviously, at the same time, it's important for you to be able to budget and plan, and long-term resources are important for that reason too. But I do have some sort of general questions and concerns about this particular provision. In part, it has to do with some of the expenses that are involved and how the resources are allocated and what they do. And I wonder, Mr. Chair, if I could ask some questions.
Senator Putnam. Would anyone from MICC like to step up and answer questions? Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ben Lentz. I'm the Director of Advancement for Minnesota Independence College and Community.
Thank you. Senator Putnam.
Thanks, Mr. Lentz, and thanks for being here again. And I hope you don't take the questions that I ask as being in any way not supportive of your program or what you do. What you're doing is awesome. I was proud and glad to just vote for giving you more resources just moments ago. But this question of long-term base funding is a really important one philosophically. I was wondering just in general, you know, it's my understanding is that tuition at MICC is around $55,000 a year. And as I understand it, your faculty are paid between $37,000 and $42,000 a year. At a private university might have a tuition around $55,000, $60,000 a year, and they'd be paying their faculty $80,000, $90,000 a year. Can you give us a little bit more insight into what's going on there with that?
Yeah, great question.
Mr. Lentz.
Thank you for the question, Senator Putnam. At our organization, it is heavily staff to student ratio. The programming that we provide, we need a lot of multiple staff members who are working in different areas, specifically in independent living skills, transportation, social emotional development. Then you move into a careers path. So you have specialties where you're working in health services, retail, culinary, and hospitality as primary specific areas. And so on that front end, while yes, it is an expensive endeavor for that 3-year college experience, the lifetime impact and what we've seen in our social return on investment that we've done through Wilder is those dollars that come from the state of Minnesota are a $38 return to society. And that's because an individual who statistically is about to go a path where they might live at home with their parents until their parents can't care for them anymore, will never hold down consistent employment, is finding a pathway, as the individuals here with me today, living independently with the support network that's there, jobs, voting, volunteering, they're really becoming a holistic member of the community. And that pathway is worth, in my mind, and I know in our community, that investment of extra dollars. The true cost per pupil to do the programming is above $70,000. So we try to do our best to make sure that what our families are charged, in addition to the great support that we receive from the state of Minnesota to subsidize through financial assistance, that it remains an affordable option. And this partnership has been revolutionary for us. To think 5 or 6 years ago when we first received our appropriation, how most of our families were in the full pay category, that meant they had to have the resources to do it. Where we are today, more and more of our families are falling into the category of a much more socioeconomically diverse community, and they're given the opportunity to join a community that transforms not just the participants, but the parents. And I know many of you may have heard from our parents in the last couple of weeks how their life trajectory has changed because of this opportunity. So I know it's expensive. And our staff, if we could do anything over the next number of years, is to continue to pay our really talented staff more and more to keep up with the challenging work environment and the hiring environment that's out there, because their impact is so significant. But I put all of it back to our participants who have the will, the desire, and the skills there. They just need an alternate path to make that leap forward.
Sure.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Lentz, for that question. That's really helpful. And I appreciate your appreciation of your staff, too. That's awesome. It's my understanding that you also have appropriations coming from the E12 committee and from the Jobs and Workforce and Economic Development Committee. Could you give us some insight into those other sources? Are those base appropriations? Are those one-time appropriations? Could you give us some greater insight about the other sources of funding that you're getting? And also in that front, I was talking with Ms. Half a couple days ago. I love that the resources that come from us go to scholarships. I think that's awesome. Can you tell us where the money that you get from jobs goes and where the money that you get from E12 goes? Like, so just a greater context on your funding sources, if you don't mind.
Mr. Lentz.
Chair Fattah, Senator Putnam, the jobs area, we do not have a commitment currently or funding coming from the Jobs Committee currently. That's not in our funding cycle. I know we've put requests forward this year, but nothing's been approved as I'm aware, so I may be misspeaking in that regard.
Good news, you're in the budget right now.
Okay, thank you. With those, the dollars, if received, would be going to support post-graduation. So less about the college experience of those 3 years. It's looking for those ongoing services of not just the graduates of MICC. We want to be serving a greater number of adults with disabilities in the metro area specific right now who could use job support and job guidance to be able to get into the workforce. It may be an individual who's currently working somewhere that'd like to change jobs but doesn't have that support network in place. MICC has gone through the process over this last year to become a VRS certified group, or a vocational rehabilitation services. So now our participants, and as we can develop the program and move forward, we'd be able to serve others who have that desire to work with MICC for job placement. We aren't the best in the world or the pros of all jobs, but we are fantastic when it comes to adults with disabilities. So that would be the focus with those dollars, and to really strengthen that careers department. Senator, thank you. The dollars that are coming in that are supporting us through the K-12 appropriation is also supporting financial assistance and tuition reduction. A part of the benefit to keep that dollar amount from $75,000+ in true cost down to really a $49,000, I misspoke or I misheard what you were saying, but for is because we're able to fill that gap specifically across the board for Minnesota residents who attend MICC. All of those dollars are dedicated to that Minnesota participant, and it's to go across the board from the services that they're receiving within our college program, which is the independent living skills, the job and vocational exploration, the health and wellness, the social emotional development, all of those categories that we use as our person-centered programming to develop the skills necessary to live independently. And so it would be within that overall programmatic work with the college that it would be supporting.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Lentz. And I'm on jobs, so I know that what you're getting from us is a one-time appropriation over there as well. Are you in the base in the E12 budget? Do you know?
It is my understanding that we are, but I don't want to misspeak, and I would, if there is someone who could verify that, I would.
You're getting an enthusiastic nod behind you.
Okay.
So it's
good. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Alder Zell.
Thank you, sir.
And again, this is just for understanding. Yep. I don't mean to be critical at all. I'm just trying to understand things a little bit better. The one sort of, Mr. Chair, for me, can you tell us, you know, I was thinking about this as Senator Kupak and Senator Farnsworth mentioned that they were referring folks to you. Is there some sort of admittance procedure? How do you decide whether or not a student is allowed, enabled to matriculate at MICC?
Mr. Lentz.
Thank you, Chair. And Senator Putnam, great question. We do have a very rigorous application process where an applicant will submit a full form that outlines their experiences, where they've come from. Most of our participants in the college program, students in the college program, are going to have the high school equivalency or a degree through high school and maybe a year or two of transition services. So they're making progress, but for a majority of them, going to a traditional four-year college university system is not the best choice. That social-emotional development, that executive functioning skills aren't there to be a successful. Intellectually, some might be really ready for it, but that other part's going to keep them from being able to do it. So we go through that process. We have a requirement within 6 months of the application to have a neuropsych evaluation so that we have a full constitute of where are they in their full diagnosis, autism spectrum disorder being our 60-plus percent of our participants. That's their primary. And we're going through that. There's interviews that take place. We do interviews with the parents. We do interviews with the student, a potential student. We get referrals. As someone who works in the higher education realm, it's very much what you experience on the college and university side. With one level more caveat, we have to be very specific on who fits our profile to be most successful. And so we need to make sure that personal safety, can you make a good decision personally to not harm yourself or harm others if you were left alone as a basis point for being able to be selected. For our application process, we did a fall application cycle this year, which we had over 28 applications for 24 spots. Now we're doing general admissions. We accepted 10 of that first group. Now we're doing general admission, which just this week will end, and we'll be reviewing and going through the process of selecting the candidates who meet the qualifications for those remaining spots in the program. The capacity has always been is our new issue. Once we were able to break down the financial challenges, which your help has made it possible with that financial assistance, there is more and more families who are knocking at our door that are great fits. And we want to continue to serve them and hopefully many more in the future.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Lentz. One last question is actually kind of more of a curiosity than anything. Are you familiar with the CO2 program at St. Cloud State?
Mr. Lentz.
I'm not. If you could provide a little bit of insight, I would appreciate it.
Sure. I think it's an opportunity. Mr. President. I just promoted or demoted you at the same time. I was rude, and then I mistitled him. It's a program that I think might be a source of potential collaboration for you at some point, because it does very similar to what you do. But it's a connection between 742, the public school system, and St. Cloud State. So you take folks with intellectual disabilities, or most of them are actually fairly high functioning on the, autism spectrum. And they're folks who've had wraparound services in the public schools. Mm-hmm. They then continue their education in a residential environment at St. Cloud State, where they have jobs during the day, where they have classes in social skills and grocery shopping and the mm-hmm. curriculum that you've got there. And they also take a class or two at either St. Cloud State or at SCTCC. And they have wraparound services, and it's continuation of those same services that they had in the public schools that last until they're 23, 24, and they end up graduating with degrees and such, similar to what you do. The one thing I think that is inspiring, impressive about you, from what I understand it, is that you keep working with people after they graduate. But one of the things that's beautiful about the St. Cloud State system is not only is it public, very affordable, anyone can go, it's also connected to the before they get there, given the implication with the public school system before the folks get there. It's a wonderful program, horribly underfunded, but doing great things with the same population that you work with, as I can understand it, doing very similar things, just in a different way.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you. I apologize to put you on the spot. I'm sure you weren't planning on testifying today. Could you remind me, where is your program, where is your school based out of?
Mr. Lentz.
Chair Fattah, Senator Duckworth, we are located in Richfield, Minnesota. We operate out of an apartment complex called Colony and several other locations within that vicinity, a church where we rent space, as well as some homes that we operate out of in the neighborhood. We've been there for 27 years, and where our graduates have chosen to live, majority of them is within that vicinity. What we've found in our programming, and thank you for sharing so much about that new program. I'm just starting to learn a little bit about it, so that helped to bring some very important light to the piece. We specifically picked Richfield years ago because it is a first-ring suburban location. It's highly accessible for public transit. The jobs opportunities are significant in the area. The city of Richfield is dynamic to work with, from the public, from the city hall to the fire department, the police department. We do a lot of integrated experiences for our participants to learn what it means to be a good citizen of the area. But because of that location, we found the success is teaching and learning in an area where then you can have the rest of your life continue to be within a 5 or 6 mile radius. So very excited to hear from Senator Putnam about an opportunity of a new avenue that's happening. But we know when there's been 138% increase since 2009 for children in the public school system receiving that have autism spectrum disorder as their primary diagnosis, receiving special education, it's growing. So let's get more like this new program going and continue to hopefully work with organizations like MICC that have a great track record of success. And again, to see that partnership flourish is wonderful. So I'm glad to hear there's funding going to a new avenue and a new program.
Mr. Chair, Duckworth. Thank you. If someone is trying to in their head or in their minds compare your organization, or what would be maybe what was referred to earlier as a private school or a private institution, if they're trying to compare that to another one, would it be fair to say that the students that you serve require maybe a more staff intensive or more hands-on approach than you might expect of what someone might consider to be a traditional private school?
Mr. Lenz.
Senator Chair Fatah and Senator Duckworth, as not the expert, I don't want to misspeak on that regard, but I believe that the programming that we're providing is opening the doors to somebody who has all the potential there. They just need a different path. And I know that the path that's going to be offered in a different category of a public school system has validity and value, and it's going to be like is a great way to do it. We've just been successful in ours. It's been refined for 27 years. We are constantly refining the work that we do. And one of the things that the pandemic has shown us, we were one of the very few nonprofit organizations that remained fully in person after March, came back in August, to provide our services, because we know adults with autism and with learning differences, consistency and support was necessary. And so we did everything we could to continue to keep that going. But that meant we had to be agile. We had to be quick to change. We had to be adjustable. And I feel like that's a big part of our community, as we've not said, this is what it was in 1996 and that's the only way we're doing it. We've evolved and changed because thankfully here in the state of Minnesota, autism research, the way to see how much our young K through 12 students who have autism spectrum disorder are getting services and opportunities is preparing them. But there's that cliff once they get done that doesn't have enough options. And so we're glad to be one of very, very few that can offer that. But I think in our system, there's some great value to it to have that.
Senator Duckworth.
Just one last question, if I may, Mr. Chair. I remember specifically visiting with you and two young women. They're graduates, I think, of your program. And I gained a tremendous amount of appreciation for not only what these students experience while they are receiving education, but also afterward. And I think in when we look at these students in particular, that is such a critical aspect for them in laying the foundation, not just for their education, but really for the rest of their life. If I remember, they were roommates too. And so if you could just help us gain some awareness as to the measures to which your organization goes once a student even completes their education and goes on to try to begin and successfully navigate the journey of life, I think that would be helpful as well, if you don't mind.
Mr. Lenz.
Chair Fatah, Senator Duckworth, thank you. That very great question. Our community program, and something that I think sets us completely apart from other organizations, is it's lifelong. So upon graduation of those 3 years, not every single one of our participants or graduates or students is ready to have a completely independent life without any level of supports. And so we have a community program that provides social engagement, 80 opportunities a month to bring people together, like-minded individuals, friends from those years we're going to school together that can gather and do activities and fun. One of the things that's not universal but is typical for a number of people with autism spectrum disorder is social engagement's hard. And when you offer things up, it provides a social life. And when we all have social lives, our lives are better. We also offer supports when it comes to career path or independent living. If you can keep and maintain a home, you're going to keep and maintain a job a lot better. And so we're there for those who need certain levels of support and engagement in that realm as well. But what we see, that longevity, and that's where, to be honest with you, where the big return on investment has been from the Wilder research, is it's not about the 3 years. 3 years are expensive. And we can all say in higher education, you spend a lot of money for 3 years that hopefully sets you up for a lifelong of continued learning and opportunity. What we do is very heavy on that front end, but then it continues to be a lifelong opportunity with some level of support, depending on what they need. And that's what's helped keep so many people living those independent lives, because they have a support network. And they also, their parents know there's somebody there, a partner there, to be with their child for the years in the future too.
Senator Duckworth.
Mr. Chair, I just want to let you know that I agree with your and Senator Putnam's sentiments about, you know, consistently looking at appropriations and the organizations at which they go to, whether they're nonprofits, a state agency, a private entity, what have you. And so I think that's a wise thing for us to do. I think that is one of our very basic responsibilities as a legislature. And I would just say that's great. And if we're going to do that moving forward, let's do it fairly and apply it to everyone so that we're abiding by that and people know what to expect moving forward. I think that's a wise thing to do. And, you know, maybe that's something we'll continue to work on as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator Duckworth. Senator Farnsworth.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I would like to speak on in favor of this amendment. And as I said, I've been a special education teacher for most of my career. And so I walk around town and I run into former students and I ask them, hey, what are you up to? Nothing. Where do you live? You know, and through the conversation, you find out that maybe they're on disability. And they're students that I would think would fit very well into a program like this. And so I think maybe 5 years of subsidized housing and disability paid for by the state could be saved with a program like this, because this is a program that doesn't suffer from low expectations. It has high expectations, and it tells kids you can do this. I wish there was a program like this on the Iron Range. And so looking at financial savings, just the fiscal responsibility that we have to the taxpayers of Minnesota, sort of putting this program on an appropriation like this will save the taxpayers money, but it will also benefit folks with disabilities to a degree that I don't even know that I could describe. And so I think you know, guaranteeing funding so that they can have that sort of steadiness would be helpful for a lot of kids. So I support this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Farnsworth. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up question suggested by one of Senator Duckworth's comments. Could you tell us a little bit, what is your faculty-student ratio?
Mr. Lentz.
Chair Fattah.
Ballpark.
I was just running through it. Our currently, we have between the college program is 56 students in the program currently. And our staff is 70 total, but that also intermixes with the community programs. I just don't have, I don't want to misspeak, but of the overall 155 participants in both the college and the community living, be 70 employees approximately to that.
Senator Button.
Thank you, Mr. Lentz. That actually makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate the numbers. That's really good to know. The program I was telling you about before, the CO2 program, is, I think it's like 8 or 9 years old at St. Cloud State. It's been there for a while. And I bring that up not as competition with you, but as an opportunity for collaboration. Mm-hmm. Because the thing that differentiates, as I suggested earlier, is not just that it's public, and it also is horribly underfunded, mm-hmm. But that it makes connections with these kids while they're still in high school. And it's a continuation of the services that they received in high school. And maybe that's something that you'd like to explore in the future. But in addition, as I said earlier, I really do admire what you do with folks after graduation. So it seems like two halves of a coin of a sorts, and perhaps there's an opportunity for collaboration or learning from each other. Mm-hmm. So if that's something that you'd like me to facilitate, I do hope you let me know. I do want to say that I absolutely 100% support the work that you're doing. I think this is awesome. I do have a concern about the base appropriation, though, so I'm likely to vote against the amendment. But please do understand that I very much support what you're doing.
Chair Fattah and Mr. Senator Putnam, just one comment. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it is great to hear your support with that. We just recently were up in your neck of the woods presenting to the Benton and Stearns County Special Education Department. We were able to get in touch with a number of individuals who are going through the transitions program there that are hopefully going to be candidates in the future for MICC. So we'd love to have that partnership and appreciate it. The last comment would just be we do work on the high school side as well. We offer summer programming. There are 2-week-long immersion experiences where individuals are able to come be on our campus. They learn about job exploration, kind of a mini version of MICC. That has been extremely helpful in educating and engaging at that younger level. But one of the things that's starting to happen that I, having worked in the college and university system previously, we're seeing families now come and visit with 13-year-olds, with 14-year-olds, with 12-year-olds. They know about us, they're interested in us, and it's a long-term path that they're working with us, just like you're seeing at the traditional college university system. And so we're so excited that the families have an option. When one child is going on to the U or to St. Ben's and St. John's or St. Thomas, wherever they're going, that their other child is also looking at that college opportunity and describing what you were saying at the St. Cloud program. Sounds like it's another, you know, feather in the cap to say there's options.
Even St. Thomas, Mr. Owens?
Well, maybe not.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. With that, go ahead. And I'll get to you, Senator Reck, after. Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm also not in support of this amendment because of the stated reasons previously, but also because it would be redirecting money from the student support funding, which we've heard time and time again from our students in this committee that the two major things they need help with is mental health support as well as addressing their basic needs. And I got a breakdown of some of this funding where it would be going to. First, just a few things, mental health peer support, which is a 24/7 service. It would also go towards their basic needs resource hub, which is again available via text and phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It'll go towards a mental health complementary clinic support, which is a 24/7 crisis response program, providing clinical therapy resources. So I think that rather than taking away from this program, I think we should stick with the original plan and the original amendment. So with that, Senator Rarick, would you like to move the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So yes, I will move the A8, and I appreciate those last comments, and so I could maybe make this more tempting by going back to the original fund I wanted to take this money from, the U of M operating section. I appreciate all the comments and all the discussion here for MICC.
Thank you. And I believe it's A9. A8. Okay. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion is not adopted. Or the amendment is not adopted. Senator Rick, I believe you also have the A9 amendment. You have the A9 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, I will move the A9. I was thinking you had that amendment. I was going to defer to you on that one.
No worries.
Okay.
it's just the workforce language that we heard earlier, Senate File 1177.
Yeah, this would be adding in the workforce for construction.
Correct, public safety.
I don't.
Yep, and education.
There we go, education and public safety awesome. Into the definitions.
Awesome. Any discussion? Senator Duckworth.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like maybe you and Senator Rarick have already talked about this one. I think it's a great amendment. It's awesome. I'm glad you guys are willing to include it. Would love to see it pass. Thanks.
And I also encourage a green vote. Thank you, Senator Duckworth. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion is adopted. The amendment is adopted. That brings us to the end of our submitted amendments. Members, are there any further comments? Senator Duckworth.
I've got one more amendment for you, Mr. Chair. It's not a gotcha. I'll speak to it a little bit, and then I hope it just leads to further discussion. So I apologize for not having the time to get it to you sooner. I offer the A4 amendment.
Members, before you have the A4 amendment, Senator Duckworth, would you like to speak to the amendment?
I will, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Briefly, at a high level, what this amendment does is it takes the Minnesota commitment to higher education allocation of about $177 million and it really just divides it up over the years 2024 and 2025 and adds that money to the state grants allocation. So if you have the bill or the amendment, the amended bill in front of you, line 1.23 of that, where it says state grants, and it shows the allocations of $236.7 million and $229 million respectively. Those numbers would change to about $324.7 million and $317 million for the state grant. And here's why I'm making that suggestion, Mr. Chair. I commend your work on the Minnesota commitment to higher education and the idea behind helping folks that may need a little bit of help receive 100% tuition at a public school, or excuse me, a public university or college here in Minnesota. It's a little bit of a newer concept and idea, and it looks like you were open to some of the input that we had in committee, and I appreciate that. I still have some questions about the implementation of that program, and to give us the time to shake that out a little bit more, I'd love to just plus up the state grant. If you're willing, because we know it's a tried and true program, applies to a lot of students and really maximizes the choice of where they would like to pursue their higher education, which is why I offer the amendment, and hopefully we continue to have this conversation, looking at the state grant, looking at the new initiatives that you'd like to roll out, and trying to come up with the best version of both.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Are there any comments from members? Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to, speak in favor of the amendment as well. This is something that I've worked with Representative Mahmoud Noor on for a couple of years as well. He's talked about this or something close to it. But as when we had the hearing, I talked about it as well. The example of Pine Tech, private groups have stepped forward to come up with ways to get to those final dollars, and that's where I struggle with then the state kind of stepping in and taking over that, and in a way, looking at them and saying, we don't need you anymore. Government can take care of this. I like the grant programs. It's something I've said ever since getting on this committee, and as I look at it, that is distributing the money to those. It starts with those most in need, and I believe in the amendment it also is raising the caps so that people, this isn't just expanding it to more people being eligible, it's raising the amount that individuals can get, so it's making their school more affordable, but yet it's still allowing for those, a lot of small towns do a lot of work to get scholarships to kids to go to whatever school they choose, things like that. And so we're not going to be getting in the way of those things that have been going on for years. And I think as Senator Duckworth brought up, this is going to intertwine with a lot of other things that are out there, and we just don't understand, I don't think, the ramifications of this yet. So I would agree and much prefer the grant route with this money to assist our students. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth, for this this option and for this opportunity for conversation. There is, I think, a philosophical difference in operation here, and that we know that the state grant program excellent as it is, helps tons of students. It does disproportionately help students who are choosing to go to private education instead of going to public ones. 60% of the money goes to 40% of the people. State Grant is a wonderful, successful program, does great stuff, but it's not doing the same thing that the free college program is intended to do. So I remain deeply committed to this program that Chair Fattay has generated. I was just talking to some folks today. You guys know that today we had a bunch of students from the private colleges here advocating for the state grant. I had a fantastic conversation. I had three folks from St. Ben, St. John sit on my couch in my office. And they were here talking about the state grant. I said, yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? It's a really great program. It's wonderful. And one of them said, yeah, it's great for middle-class kids to get to choose which college they go to. And I said, well, yeah, that is actually kind of what it does. It's not if you go to college, it's which college you go to. And something that Mr. Cervenek said a couple days ago was brilliant. And I very much respect that he said that, that people do deserve opportunities to find the school that fits them best. And that's what the state grant helps with. 100% agree. But that's only if you get to college in the first place. And when I told them that we only had a pie of a certain size, and that if you take a big chunk of that pie for one place, you don't have as much space for the rest of the pie. And I said, what do you think? Should we try to create this system where any family that makes under $80,000 a year can send their kids to college without paying any tuition? Or should we put that piece of the pie into the state grant? All three of them said no, put it into this free college program. And obviously that's not a scientific study, right? It's three people sitting on my couch. But I appreciate, respect, adore, want to invest as much as I possibly can in the state grant program. But this is worth a try. This is worth a try for every one of those kids in that family that makes under $80,000 a year. Didn't even think they could go to college in the first place. Because all we ever talk about when it comes to college is how expensive it is. This is an opportunity for those kids who didn't even know it was an option. And now they can do it, and they can graduate without debt. They can try. Kids can try college now because they don't have to look at $30,000 in debt after their first day in class. I think that's worth the risk.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. Senator Rarick. I mean, sorry, Senator Duckworth.
That's okay. I often get mistaken for Senator Rarick. Senator Putnam, I appreciate that. I appreciate the passion. I unfortunately did not have the opportunity to conduct my own non-scientific study prior to this. But for what it's worth, your points are well taken. And what I tried to do when I was giving consideration to all these programs, specifically coming before this committee and the state grant and what Senator Fattay has brought before us, which I think is a noble and very worthwhile consideration, was this. If I happened to be one of those students and I was eligible, or my family was eligible for this program, but I couldn't take or utilize any of that funding at a particular institution because it didn't qualify, to me that didn't necessarily seem fair, or it seemed like a limitation for that student. And here's why I bring it up. One of the beautiful things that have to do with higher education in our state is whether it's public, whether it's private, there are so many different unique specific programs provided by so many different unique and specific institutions that you might have a student and their family who qualifies for the program you've brought forward, but they want to attend an institution where they're not eligible to use it, right? And that's why I bring it forward, because between the two, in my humble opinion, the state grant affords more flexibility to more students. And that's why I bring it forward for conversation, because one of the ideas I was kicking around in my head that I just didn't have time to formulate in a reasonable amendment was, what if we took these students you're trying to target and help, and we said something to the effect of this, let's take a look at either an average tuition at a state or public higher education institution in Minnesota, or maybe we just use the U's. And because you qualify for this program, you can take, or you will be awarded a tuition in that amount, but you can apply it toward the school that maybe is more in line with the program that you're seeking to do. And then I thought, wait a minute, I think I'm describing the state grant program, right? Or something similar. So I think maybe we can strike a balance between what you're trying to achieve, to Senator Putnam's point, for kids and families who never really truly thought college was attainable and are stressed out about what that potential financial burden might be, but also afford them the maximum opportunities available to them in the state of Minnesota regarding all higher education colleges or institutions. So appreciate your work on this proposal. Appreciate Senator Putnam's passionate representation of those students and the students he visited with earlier today as well. And I'm hopeful that between all of us and our colleagues, we can come up with something that we can be proud of as a state, helps the most amount of students possible, keeps college affordable, and my goodness, limits the amount of debt that these folks are taking on and find themselves having to deal with after they graduate. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator Duckworth. Senator Umu-Verbaeten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, just want to say I really enjoy the Higher Education Committee, and I love the discussions that we have here. I think we're all really committed to our students and trying to support them in continuing their education. I'm really excited about the Minnesota Commitment to Higher Education Act. I think it is the exact sort of bold move that we need to make right now for our kids. And I think we also have a duty to fund our public institutions first. That's just my fundamental belief. I have serious problems with the sort of subsidies that private institutions get from the state grant program, and I can't support increasing that.
Thank you so much, Senator Umu-Verbaeten. Any other comments? Thank you so much for bringing forward this amendment. I personally will recommend a no vote. I think we tried with this entire package to balance increasing the LME and the credit cap, as well as the tuition-free promise, increasing the investments. Originally, I wanted it to be universal. But talking with committee members and working with leadership and working with OHI, we went to 120,000, and then having family AGI. And having further conversations, we targeted the most students that need help the most. So that's why the cap right now is at $80,000. And I think it's right. And when we're trying to do a couple things, number one, address equity concerns, as well as declining enrollment. As a state, we have a 70% attainment goal. For our white students, it's in the high 60s, I believe, 68% or so. But for our black students, it's in the low 30s. And for our indigenous students and our Latino students, I believe it's in the high 20s. It's below 30%. That has to change. When we look at enrollment, I've gotten countless calls from across the state, from our public institutions saying that we need help. We need help, and we need investments, and we need to turn the ship around in terms of enrollment. As a state, I believe we're averaging statewide 20, 25, 28% decline in enrollment. If you look in areas like St. Cloud, 40%, it's really, really bad. So we really, really need to turn the ship around. And that's what the commitment to the higher education, or the Minnesota Commitment to Higher Education Act will do. It says that students that traditionally have not thought about college, weren't able to attend college, we're opening the door for you, for our public institutions. And I agree 100% with Senator Umu-Verbaeten that as public officials, we have a higher obligation, moral obligation to our public institutions. And we've heard time and time again from students that not only is it not affordable, but they work 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet to address their basic needs, which is why we have the Pell Match piece in there to address housing and food insecurity and everything else that we can that they can think of. So I appreciate your thoughtfulness, and I really do appreciate you bringing forward this amendment, but I will be a no vote on this, and I recommend a no vote as well. Thank you, Senator. Any other questions, comments? With that, would you like to move the amendment, Senator Duckworth? The A4?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I move the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any further comments or discussion or questions on the bill as a whole? Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I get just to follow up a little bit, I hope one of the things that you will be willing to work on a little bit on your program that you have there, a concern that I have is, a family that makes $81,000 a year now gets no help from this. You know, just, you know, that's some of these things, you know, we scale things so that as they're, as you're moving into a little bit higher bracket, you get less and less help, where this is just a cutoff. And I think that's something that a number of families are going to have to be looking at, and that might, you know, there could be ramifications of that that I hope you're open to some discussions on how we can maybe scale this so there isn't that just cliff of you're just done and not considered in this. So thank you.
Thank you for advocating for universal free college, Senator Rurick.
That's exactly what I heard him say. Mr. Chair, if I may.
Senator Duckworth.
So while we're looking at that program and some of the other things, just one other thing I want to throw out for consideration was this. We do a lot of work in this committee. Matter of fact, one of the amendments we passed earlier was trying to address shortage areas, right? And we incentivize our students through multiple ways to pursue degrees and career paths. We know that the state of Minnesota and folks out there in the workforce have let us know that we have shortages in. And so as I was contemplating that program, I thought, well, how will this impact and maybe be counterproductive to some of the incentives that we provide to try to get students to pursue careers in the fields we know where we have a shortage? And I'll give you an example. Let's say that you've got somebody who goes to the U of M and they decide that they want to pursue a career in teaching, become a teacher, because there are some incentives in place to help them with tuition or help them with tuition reimbursement if they pursue that career. Well, but now, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but now they qualify for 100% tuition under this program, and they say, well, rather than pursuing that because I was financially incentivized to do so, I'm going to stick with the business degree or what other degree that I maybe would have pursued otherwise. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, just saying that could be something that we see play out with the implementation of a program like that and how it might counteract some of those incentives or very strategic with providing students to hopefully entice them to go down those career paths that will help us address and fulfill some of those shortages. So it's not a criticism of the program. It's just me trying to think through what might be some second or third order effects that we see play out as a result of it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Duckworth, for that point. And this conversation today has been really enlightening, too. So I'm old-ish. You know, I paid $430 a semester to go to college in tuition not that long ago. And I didn't want to be a college professor. I had no idea what I wanted to be. If I became what I thought I was going to be when I was 18, I'd probably be a cowboy, an astronaut, or a ballerina. I don't even know. Fingers crossed. But I think that that's one of the things we need to get back when we think about the college is it's not just about a job, it's about exploration. The reason why taxpayers pay for colleges is because they're not just about getting you a job, they're about making you a citizen. And becoming a citizen takes a while. That's why taxpayers pay from in-state and for the U. It's not just career. If it was just about getting a career, 3M should be paying for their education. But they don't. We do. And we do because it's a public good. Education is a public good. Higher education is a public good. And I think we need to remember that. And also remember that those are early years and ages of exploration in general, but even more so today than they ever have been before. The average 30-year-old is going to have 5 jobs by the time they get to 30. And the relationship between a job and a career is much different than it used to be. And this is why I think we need to get people in the door. We need to get people in the door. We need to get people on the college campus. And we need to fund those classes in particular careers so that when that person takes their very first class in welding or in literature or whatever it is, they have a great class. And it's that class that they have when they're a freshman or a sophomore that gives them the idea of the career that they want to pursue. That they have the resources in that class to learn what a career might be, a career and a lifestyle and a way of being public. So to me, that access point is just as important as the trajectory that they might pursue, because if they don't have the access, they can't find that trajectory. So I completely appreciate where you're coming from. I think that makes sense, that we are talking about trying to fill public needs by encouraging people to go on particular career paths. But we can't also forget the public good and opportunities to develop as complete citizens. which is the core directive of a lot of what we do in higher ed, in my perspective.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, Senator Putnam knows how to just really speak to what fires me up. You talked about citizenship, and you talked about the public good. And one of the other things that I was rolling around in my head specific to this bill is, I did the Army ROTC program at the University of Minnesota. I'm very familiar with the Armory, and I apologize to anybody who's watching that we may have woken up in the morning as we were running around on campus doing our physical exercise, what have you. And I'm still in the military, I'm in the Minnesota Army National Guard, actually, been doing it for 18 years. And one of the first questions I usually ask a soldier is, why'd you join the Army? And the answers range from diehard patriots to, well, I wanted some college money. And I don't blame them for that by any means. And one thing you might do or give consideration to as it pertains to this program is perhaps another way somebody can become eligible for it is by serving in the Minnesota Army National Guard. Because I would hate to disincentivize what our state is trying to accomplish in terms of its National Guard. And it might be another way that we can encourage folks to attend college that maybe thought it wasn't something for them or not attainable. Maybe they don't have to abide by some of the same financial metrics. Maybe we tell them it's good enough if you're willing to serve your state and your country for X amount of years, we'll cover that cost. And there are some programs in place that seek to do that, but maybe we can improve upon it in conjunction with your program. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hate to keep belaboring this, but one of the other things Senator Putnam brought up, and it kind of just another thing for us to keep in the back of our heads. You know, I think one of the things that leads to student debt coming out of college is going to college before you know what you want to do, and you're taking classes, and you end up, you take a different course, different track, and now you've spent a bunch of money on classes that you really didn't need. And, you know, I think that's, you probably won't hear me say this very often, but there's something that I believe my brother actually did right. And he lives in Wisconsin, so I can say that. He's not going to hear that. But, you know, he had no idea what he wanted to do coming out of high school. And so he went and got a job and went around to a bunch of different colleges that his friends went to. And I think you all know why, the main reason why he went there. But he was also exploring what the options were, what other people were doing. And a year later, he figured out what he wanted to do, and he went to River Falls and got his four-year degree. But he didn't go and start spending money on tuition when he had no idea what he wanted to do. So I think that's something I worry a little bit about, too, that we'll be investing state dollars for people that are exploring and not on a track that they're actually going to end up using in their eventual career. So just one other aspect to consider as we move forward with this option.
Senator Umar-Verbane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as we're thinking about this conversation of workforce shortage and particularly, you know, needing more folks in construction, needing more teachers, needing more folks in law enforcement, our public institutions are helping train those folks. So I'm really, really excited about the Minnesota Commitment to Higher Education Act, and I think those institutions are helping us address those shortages. They are the ones educating folks, primarily in Minnesota, in those industries.
Thank you, Senator Umar-Verbane. And Senator Duckworth, to your point, and the governor had a recommendation to explore feasibility for public service and have that as a grant program. Subdivision 42 has a higher education public service feasibility study. It's a Minnesota service initiative to increase student civic engagement. So I'd be happy to speak with you how we can expand on that as well. But thank you so much for your comments. Any other comments or questions on the overall bill? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be a bit of an unpopular sentiment. Before I say that, I'll say something nice. I have enjoyed this committee because it's been one of the least divisive committees in this whole complex. With that said, I've heard a few times, you know, people say, well, you know, our students have to work two or three jobs, and, you know, in order to make it to college. And I remember when I was, gosh, I was probably 21, home for the summer in college. My mom owned a hair salon, and my dad did all of the remodeling work, and we were putting this tile floor in. And I'm like, man, this is hard. This is, can't we just hire somebody? And my dad said, well, if it was easy, you wouldn't be proud of it when it's done. And my concern is that we're making college so easy that we're losing the value. When I was in college, I worked three jobs. I was filling Coke, worked at a grocery store, and cleaning my mom's salon on weekends. I'm 44 years old. I'm a state senator. When I get back home, I'm going to go back to school at the work, at the school. I'm going to work selling real estate, and then I'll still pick up jobs painting houses and doing odd jobs like that. That's life. Work has a certain inherent value, and while I'm not saying that that I want college students to not have any fun and work all the time, I think that's part of the college experience. I mean, I had the illegal hot plate in my dorm because I couldn't afford all of the nice groceries, so I was making ramen noodles and macaroni in Ireland Hall at St. Thomas. And they never discovered that we had the illegal hot plate. And so I guess my concern is just an overarching concern that if we make something too easy, that it loses its value. Yes, we have to value public education, but it's also important for kids to actually have to earn it and have to work for it. So probably not the most popular sentiment, but there's value in working for something too.
Thank you for your comment, Senator Duckworth. And to that, I would say that Farnsworth. Sorry.
I'm not sure.
It's because you two have been going back and forth the whole time. I apologize. Senator Farnsworth. I lost my train of thought now. Probably for the better.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Yeah, Senator.
Can Senator Putnam remind us how much tuition was when he went to school?
And include the year.
Well, back in my day, Senator Reed.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
You can go first.
Well, so, it's a fantastic point, I think, okay. Senator Farnsworth. And as one of our colleagues reminded us recently, echoing Thorstein Veblen, the great sociologist early part of the 20th century, this is what I'm going to nerd out on you guys. Sometimes there is a sense of relative deprivation in that, you know, what feels like hard work now might not feel like hard work at some other time, or we always feel like we're working hard because we're not looking at the objective circumstances that are structuring that work. So I was a horrible student in high school. I barely graduated from high school and had no intentions of going to college. I went to college to run track. That's when I went to college. And where I went to school, average age of a student was 27 years old. I always had at least one 80-year-old in one of my classes. Frequently, there were mothers with kids in my classes where I went to college. You can't even do that anymore. You can't work three jobs and go to college. It's not even an option. It was $438 a semester when I started in college. But even more importantly, to go to a junior college, it was $25 for as many classes as you wanted to take. And you were done after 2 years. You were automatically accepted into one of the four-year schools in the state where I was living. Automatically. And all your classes transferred. It was accessible. It was a path towards something better. And I think that that's what public universities are supposed to do. You know, and another thing is one of the reasons why I did so poorly in high school is because I was working two jobs in high school, right? So I was already working, not thinking about going to college because I was trying to pay my bills and help out my family and do those things when I was a kid too. Those are people who don't, I wouldn't have gone to college if I wasn't running. I don't think I would have. And a lot of people wouldn't have. I wouldn't go to college unless they had some other kind of reason to do it. And it's to what I think Senator Mover-Baton is getting at is that it's not even an option, no matter how hard you work. It's not even an option for a lot of people these days. And the question of work ethic is, I think, a much larger cultural question that's not specific to college students. It's not specific to this moment. It's not specific to education. The question of work ethic is a much larger cultural question that isn't immediately bearing or germane to this specific concern would be another point that I would make.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Overvane.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. I think you got it, my point. And I hear where you're coming from, Senator Farnsworth. I think it's just we're hearing from students that they're working really hard and they're still graduating with debt, right? It's just that inaccessible. I remember going through, you know, the FAFSA process and seeing how much debt I was going to take on, and my dad telling me about the days when he could just work in the summer and pay for the college courses that were coming up for the next year. And we're not in that state anymore because of the lack of the investment in higher education. And also, you know, it's not just even working to be able to pay for courses. I mean, we have students who they're working to provide for their families, right? So they've got to pay for rent. They've got to pay for medical bills for themselves, for their families, and try to pay for tuition. So I think our students are invested and they're working as hard as we can. We gotta meet them there and we've got to help them out.
Thank you, Senator Overbin. They both took most of what I was going to say. But as Senator Overbin said, and Senator Putnam, the larger issue is that school is just not accessible for everybody. For those who it is accessible for, as Senator Overbin said, they're graduating with a large amount of debt. And if they're not graduating with large amounts of debt, there's a lot of them that are dropping out. And when they drop out, the debt doesn't disappear from the classes that they took. And we're seeing across the board, that's the equity side. Now, on the state side, we're seeing across the board declining enrollment. And at the same time, we have severe workforce shortages across the state that we need to address. So it's not like we're going to open the floodgates and then all the jobs are filled and then what's going to happen now? It's not like we have, even if we have every job filled, I mean, every student coming in, we increase the attendance, students start filling, we're going to still have a lot more need. This is just the very beginning. And decades ago, we made a decision as a country that we're going to start having the government have a larger role within public schools, make K through 12 free for everybody, right? Because we knew that as a country with education, with educated workforce, we're better off. And now that we're more advanced, we're starting to see, hey, we might need a 2-year degree or a 4-year degree. And I think we need to start having those conversations and revisiting that discussion and saying, maybe as we made that decision a long time ago, that right now, times have changed. Now we need to have students with a college degree. With this universal, and by the way, this conversation right now, we've been talking about tuition-free piece for the most part, but there's a lot of parts of the bill that have been bipartisan that both members of both sides of the aisle have carried that I really greatly appreciate, and I wanna highlight that as well. But Senator Farnsworth, I believe you had another comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't want anybody to misconstrue my comments to say that we should lower funding. It's just an overarching concern that we should take care of every single little bit of you know, somebody's life. We talk about student loans. I graduated in 2000 from St. Thomas with $33,000 in student loans. So the average right now in Minnesota is $31,000. So I was a high achiever even back then. And so I understand graduating with student loans, but the reality is that graduating with a college degree meant that I was going to likely experience higher earnings in life. So there's also the payoff to that. College is a good thing. It's a good investment. People who attend college tend to have, I think the most recent statistic is about $1 million more in lifetime earnings. But my point was more an overarching sort of concern about this sentiment that we should take care of every little bit of life. And I guess, you know, to me, suffering in a college dorm is a rite of passage. And not really suffering, but learning how to survive on your own, learning how to be an adult and how to, you know, get your own food and figure a lot of these things out, I think is sort of part of what college should be. So, but again, it wasn't a suggestion that we cut any of this funding. It just was an overarching concern that we want to make sure that people who are becoming adults are actually becoming adults.
Thank you, Senator Farnsworth. I understand that. And the good thing is we're not mandating students to attend college for free. It's just giving them the access and the opportunity to do so. So if they want to continue doing what they're doing, they don't want to attend school, they want to hang out, they want to work on the family business, they want to attend our parks, They want to frolic in our parks. I think I've seen fun of frolic around a few times. You frolic, yeah. They can still do so. But I appreciate your input. Anyone else? With that, I want to say that I greatly appreciated chairing this committee for my first time and working with all of our members and having the input of all of our folks that have been here time and time again. I appreciate each and every single one of you. I want to say thank you especially to OHI, Ms. Oliver, and Commissioner Olson and the team that are here. I want to say thank you all so much. I want to say thank you to the members who I've worked with and not just partnered with, but learned from as well. So it's been an honor to be the chair. And I think I see Senator Kupick raising his hand to say something. Okay. I just want to say that I'm greatly appreciative for each and every one of you. And with that, if it's okay, I'll move that Senate file 2075 be recommended to pass. Oh, as amended, be recommended to pass and we refer to the Committee on Finance. Additionally, I'll be giving the staff the authority to make technical or conforming changes as needed. And with that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The bill as amended is recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance. Thank you. And with that, committee is adjourned. Thank you.